Hello and welcome to Composer Chat, a podcast where we talk a little about music, a little about life, and a whole lot about whatever nonsense happens to come up otherwise. I'm your host, Jason Nitsch, and each week I am joined by one of my favorite composers out there in the world. It's my show, so that's why it's my favorite composers who get the invites, and you're just going to have to live with that. Stick around, we're going to do a deep dive with some of the most creative people in the world. You're listening to Composer Chat. Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Composer Chat. I'm your host, Jason Nitsch. Yes, I'm a composer. Yes, I'm here every week, but each week I am joined by a guest composer of my own selection, and we spend the next hour talking about them with frequent interruption by me. And this week, I'm really excited about my guest. It's a podcast first. It's my first group ensemble guest to the show. I'm really excited to hear what they have to say. I want to welcome to the show the Octopus Project. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. No, this is going to be great. So, I talked before we got on, like I normally let the guest kind of explain who they are during this kind of opening time period. So if you just all take a second and go around and just say, hey, I'm so-and-so, and this is kind of my deal. That would be great. So everybody can get to know you before we jump in.
Sure. Yeah. I'm Josh from the Octopus Project. As far as history goes, I mean, we all have a shared history. We started the band in 1999, and it was just kind of crazy rock band with electronics and any crazy sounds we could get our hands on. Put out records for a really long time, and then started scoring films around 2012, and have just been excitedly doing more and more of that as time has progressed.
Yeah, it's true. And I'm Yvonne, also of the Octopus Project. Like Josh said, we started this band. It was kind of a rock electronic hybrid, loud and fun, in 1999. And we've been making music together for a very long time, started doing scores within the last decade, and have really been enjoying that route, the more composer route. It's less rock band and more like focused, just a different way to work. It's been really fun.
And I'm Toto from the third of three core folks in the band. And they covered the basics pretty well.
That's really great. And I will tell y'all, I did a lot of listening this week, and I've never seen a theremin be made more cool than when y'all are playing. And the thing I most enjoyed about watching, I watched some videos, and just watching you all jump around to the stage at the different things and switch around and be like, God, what are they going to do next? Like, it was just as entertaining to watch as it was to listen to, but how wonderful that you've all been involved, you know, in this effort together, making music for such a long time. That is really cool. So I'm going to ask, and anybody can answer, like, being together for that long, what's that been like? Because I think typically we see groups kind of come and go and things like that. Like, what's that been like for y'all?
I think it, one of the reasons it works out is that we've always kind of treated it as a way to do whatever, to pursue whatever creative thing we're interested in, and not necessarily like keep it just a band where it's like just one person's songs or anything like that. It's more of a open arena where we can pursue kind of whatever aspect of creative work we're interested in. So that ends up being visual things for the band, content, projections during the shows, stage design, costumes, making videos, doing installation work, more immersive experiences, and then more lately, film composing. So it gets to be so many different things that we never really get burnt out on any one aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that in watching, you know, watching all the different stuff out there, how I mean, it just sort of feels like it's a sort of boundless, I guess, like, doesn't feel like you, as a group, as a creative entity of kind of like, we don't have any boundaries. We just do whatever kind of seems fun to us. And I love that so much.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of one of the things I really love about working on films is like each one kind of needs a different specific, vibe and calling, and sometimes it's not necessarily what we would choose to do as like a rock band or whatever, but like that's what keeps it exciting. It's like, oh, we get to like make like Western music, awesome. Or it's just like getting to do all these different things is just, yeah, it keeps it super interesting and fun.
That's really great. That's really great. Well, so I'm really interested, and we talk a lot about how people got into music in the first place. I'm really interested to hear from each of you kind of how you what was your entry point into music growing up? Kind of what did that look like for each of you? And then when we're done with that, we can kind of swing around to how you all sort of met each other and got together and started working together.
My music journey started at a very young age. I think I was obsessed with classical music. I had some classical tapes and records and a little record player. And my grandma gifted me an organ, and I ended up just kind of teaching myself by ear how to play some Beethoven songs. And I, I didn't grow up with any music training. I still, to this day, I've taken four piano lessons in my life. I'm self-taught in everything, and I play keys and theremin and some guitar and bass in the band. Yeah, I play mostly by ear. And have been, yeah, I met these guys or started a band with these guys when we were like 18 or 19. And yeah, it's been really fun playing with them.
Yeah, and I guess for me, I think my parents gave me like a little Casio for Christmas. I don't remember what year. I was like, I don't know, 8 or 9 or something, and I loved it. And would just like, yeah, learn songs, and then started playing trumpet in middle school, which like really made me love music more. But kind of quickly decided that I wanted to play rock and roll instead of whatever I was playing in the middle school. And then just, yeah, went off from there, just kind of got obsessed and took off playing in bands in high school and stuff.
Yeah, and for I don't know, I don't really remember a specific beginning point, except that there was always my mom has been involved with music in various capacities. She's now a music teacher for early childhood, so in a more like holistic kind of singing, dancing, movement sort of way. And she never taught me specifically, but she did force me to take piano lessons when I was a kid, which I resented at the time, but really value now. As a kid, I don't remember doing music per se, but I remember doing a lot of sort of like fake bands and like kind of like weird noise recordings where I would record things on a tape recorder and just like do strange like percussion collage stuff. But I didn't think about music as a particular pursuit until around high school when a few friends of mine and I all decided that we should learn how to play rock and roll. And since then, it's been a pretty focused pursuit.
That's really great. Yeah. So who wants to tell the story about how the three of you kind of started your collaboration?
Well, Yvonne and Toto met in like Sunday school when they were like 10 or something in Houston, and sort of knew each other there. But then,
Kind of met again. After high school.
yeah, like around 18, when we were all like 18.
But that was past the point where I'd already met Josh and we were playing together.
In other bands. And then, yeah, we just decided we were for a while like playing in a friend's band who like he was writing all the songs, and I think the three of us kind of wanted to maybe like do something else, and it left and created this band just with kind of like with a no rules, just like let's try everything. Let's, we listen to all this different kind of music. Let's see how we can combine all of these influences. And
Josh and I had kind of a project recording sort of novelty covers where we would like switch the genre on and I'll not go into details, like severely dorky stuff, but as a way to like learn sort of recording techniques because we were getting interested in recording and in
Yeah.
kind of our first attempts with electronic instruments. So we were kind of like working in that lane, and then after the three of us all ended up in Austin, we decided to start a band, kind of doing that in a more focused way.
Yeah, less.
Writing music instead
Yeah.
of just manipulating other people's music.
Less novelty and more, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have to start somewhere, you
Yeah.
know.
It was super fun.
Yeah.
I started as an arranger. That was my gateway drug into composing, and so, you know, it was great taking other people's great ideas and messing with them, not having to come up with your own when you're 18 or whatever it is. That's cool. So Josh, where are you from? Are you from Houston too?
I was born in San Antonio and then moved to Houston for high school.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Yeah, me too. We could talk about Houston for a long time.
We
We're all
often
Houston.
do.
But it's amazing how many people I meet that grew up there that don't live there anymore.
It's most people that I know that are
Just
from there.
about everybody I grew up with lives somewhere else, including me. So, yeah.
I think Houston has come a long way, and people are maybe not so eager to get out of there as we were.
I stayed there. I lived there 36 years, and when I finally left and I lived somewhere else, I was kind of like, you know, I really should have tried other places before right now. Like it was just kind of different, you know, and I have very fond memories from there and growing up and whatnot. But also there's, you know, 10 million people there or somewhat. So you say, oh, you're from Houston. You probably know so and so. Like, nope. Nope.
And usually from some part of the city that I've also never heard of, or
Nope.
like I've heard of that, but it may as well be, you know, in Europe somewhere.
Trying to explain to people overseas that Houston is like the same size as their country, that's a tough thing for them to wrap their head around.
So you've been driving for an hour at 60 miles an hour and you still haven't left Houston?
Yes, you've not even gotten to the other side of it yet. Yeah, that's a real thing. People don't understand
Oh, I know.
that at all. Well, cool. Yeah. Well, we'll do the deep dive on Houston when I have you back for another episode sometime.
Houston specific episode.
Where we just talk about Houston and nothing else.
It's a whole nother podcast. It's a whole nother feed.
It's a whole other podcast. I mean, I'm up here in Dallas around the Ranger fans. I can't get away from Texas Ranger fans. Like, sorry. All right, we could talk about music again. We'll call that's tangent number one. Usually,
Put it on the board.
At least two. Usually at least two. So now I'm curious to see what the second one's going to be. Well, I said this before. I love kind of the way that the music really, it's so creative, and you know, every song that I listen to is so different and really takes your ear in a different place. I don't know how many arguments I've had with music theory professors in my lifetime about rules and all of that nonsense. And so this is one of the things that I think is really gratifying about listening to the work, is that it's so just, I don't know, it just feels very natural is the wrong word. Organic maybe is a better word. It feels like it's very organic, very genuine.
Thanks.
Sure, thank you.
No,
I'll take it.
I love that. I love that. So you've all gotten together, you've decided you're going to do this group. Was it always the Octopus Project? Was that always what it was called?
This one.
Is there a story about that?
The name?
Yeah, the name, or is it just it's a great name? It's a great name.
Just words that sound good together.
Yeah, it just kind of worked, and we were trying to name another band and had a whole list of names, and the person in the other band didn't want to use this, the Octopus Project, but I think the three of us were like, I kind of like that name, like we'll just hold on to it, and then when we started this, we're like, that's it, just it works, and it
Do
was
you
only
ever
the three of us. There wasn't like four. It wasn't like a supposed to be,
an eight arm comedy?
yeah.
I got you. Okay.
We
All right.
usually play live as a four piece. I've had fourth members, and currently do, which does lead people to think it's about the number of arms. It's an unfortunate coincidence.
Do you ever see the do you ever see the other person that didn't like the name, and you see him now and you go, should have just liked the name?
Yeah, we actually saw him like 3 days ago. And, he lives in LA. He's like one of our oldest best friends. Yeah. So he's great. He's doing fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Had some deep Houston conversations with him a few days ago, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Flying Saucer Pies. Anybody? Yeah. They're not a sponsor of the show, but I would take them if they want to send me one.
Yeah.
I would drive to Houston for that. That's really great. I always love how people name things, and composers, I think, especially, are really good at naming things. And sometimes they're nonsensical, and sometimes they have really deep meaning. And so, I'm always really curious about that. Well, okay. So let me ask you this, and we can decide how we answer it. What's the first, was there like a first thing you all remember writing together, or something that started it, where you were like working on it and you're like, you know, this is really pretty good. Like, we really think this is going to work.
I feel like in general, a song will start with a sound that one or usually all of us thinks is really funny or interesting or moving in some way, just a weird sound. And I'm speaking for myself mostly. If it's something that makes me laugh, is what I want to move towards. And I feel like as a band, a lot of our songs have started out that way, with a sound that is funny or intriguing in some way or unusual.
I think like on that note, like I think the very first song that became a song of ours was something that Toto and I went to film school at UT together, and there was a project that he made with these like animated cans, and then wrote a song to it. And it started with like that sample, like on the SK-1, right? I think.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that was the first time that we're all like, this is fucking awesome. Like, you can do this kind of thing and make a, you know, a band out of this. And and I feel like everything since then is kind of built on that idea of like, we all have to be really into whatever the texture of it, you know, whatever it sounds like. That's a big, big pull for all of us.
Yeah, I think too, that's a good way to put it, like kind of pursuing a sense of like, ooh, you can do this. Yeah. Ooh, you can do this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're saying. I was kind of a traditional, you know, acoustic composer for a long time. And then I got into electroacoustic stuff about, oh gosh, is it 2024? Maybe 12 or 13 years ago. And I have those moments all of the time where I find some great library and I start listening to sounds and I go, God, I could really use this in something. And like, and like, that's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that so much. It's a dumpster accordion flamethrower instrument, and it sounds amazing. And I don't know how I've ever lived without this.
I mean, surprise is kind of like the primary element I'm looking for as both a listener and a composer, musician.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, all right. So now you start out, you're performing in the group. I mean, is that kind of what you thought you were going to do? We've got our group, we're going to be performers, we're going to release albums and those kinds of things. Like, that was the dream.
I think so. I can say for me too, that was around the time when I sort of became aware of the idea of kind of DIY touring, and that there was a circuit of bands playing, like driving around the country, playing house shows, selling shirts out of the back of the van. And seeing a few of those shows come through Austin started to get like the wheels turning. That was a thing that you could do. And that was kind of when we started, got this project off the ground. So it always seemed like there was a model to participate in.
Yeah. And pretty quickly after we graduated college, a label in Austin heard our music and like wanted to put it out. And we're like, I mean, I think all of us were just, you know, kind of trying to figure out what to do after college and job wise. And then that came along and we're like, no, this is what we want to do. Like, this is the dream, like to get to put out records and tour all over the US and or everywhere. And so, yeah, we just focused on that for a really long time until the scoring stuff came up and we're like, oh, this is awesome too. Let's do this.
Yeah. And, you know, I think Austin has at least outside of Texas, has an underappreciated music scene. I think it's getting more recognition. But like when I thought, you know, like when I was growing up and when I was graduating from college and that sort of thing, and I'm older than y'all, but I would, nobody would have thought I'm going to go to Austin and start a band. They'd be like, why? You know, and now it's, there's a real like great thriving music scene there that I think doesn't get as much, people don't realize, I don't think, and I don't think it gets as much credit for some of the really cool stuff that's going on.
Yeah, it's pretty diverse. It's awesome.
It's not all Hank Williams Jr. anymore in Texas. Like
No, yeah.
there's a lot of stuff, you know, happening. So, yeah, that has to be a really cool thing to sort of just be in the middle of.
It feels really special. Like I feel Austin, I mean, we haven't lived anywhere else in a long time, but it feels like a very supportive city of, I don't know, just people wanting to do their own thing, trying out new ideas, like experimenting and just being weirdos in general. And I feel like we wouldn't maybe necessarily have thrived in like a town that wasn't as supportive as Austin, because just like all of our friends were just great, and just the community in general, just like coming to shows and stuff. It's just, I think people are eager for new things, and it feels really special.
Yeah, I would agree. I love that. Well, I want to get to the film stuff here in a minute, but let me ask you, is there something, I ask all of my guests, is there some, do you have some big rejection story or some big disappointment? And I say, if you don't, I could fill the time talking about mine. But like, you know, was there ever a point where you came upon something, you're like, oh, we really want to do this, or this would be really cool to do, and it just, whatever reason, didn't work out. Or is everything been great, smooth sailing all ahead, never? Because I can talk.
I'm sure I know we have, you know, goals and aspirations, but I'm struggling to think of like a particular rejection that really hurt. I think we generally just kind of like look for the next one instead of focus on the one that didn't happen. Which of course, like for anybody, there have been a billion things that didn't happen.
Yeah, definitely things where like you get your hopes up about, and then it doesn't happen. We're like, ah, but like Tota said, I think it's just like we're like, well, I guess we're just gonna move on to something else, and you shift focus, and it all works out great.
If there had been one in the last like couple of months that I was still sore about, I would bring it up, but there hasn't been. And everything else has been duly processed.
Look forward and not back. That's probably
For
wise
sure.
for creative people. Yeah, my favorite rejection is the next one. That's what I always say. Oh, I did tell a group of young composers one time. I said that you have to have a really thick skin when you're in kind of a creative field like that. And I said you have to be ready to deal with rejection. I guess so. In that way, high school was a wonderful preparatory experience for me. That's about how they laughed too. They didn't get it at all. They were like, what are you talking about?
I think that a little bit of it too is having spent so much time touring in an independent way, where you just kind of like every day is another weird set of challenges, and you just roll with it, and eventually it all just like goes by you, and you stay focused on what you came to do.
Our very first tour in 2002, halfway through the tour, we got our van was stolen in New York. And I think that was maybe the hardest thing that we've ever gone through together.
And it was right at the beginning of us being, a touring band. So,
So I think it like, yeah, it hardened us a little bit. We're like, if we can make it through this, we're okay.
it really felt like we got the worst possible experience out of the way right at the top, and we made it through it somehow, and kept going, just kept moving.
But at the time, it was also like, well, this really sucks, but I've never done this before. Maybe this is just how it is.
And being naive, I think, helped.
Oh, yes. Very
Well, we were
naive.
also like, you know, 22 or something years old. And so just like, I don't know, whatever. It sucks, but.
This is how every tour starts. You lose all of your stuff, and then you regroup and you go on. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I've heard Aerosmith talk about that, I think.
Yeah, and where'd they go?
They seem to be okay.
Yeah, I think they're doing fine.
I don't think any of them are in rehab right now.
That's good.
I think they're mostly still alive. Let's see. We did rejection stories. Y'all don't have any. That's really great.
lots of rejections, no stories.
Yeah. Plenty of rejections, but nothing we're hanging on to.
Yeah.
You just say, I'm just not ready to talk about it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Well, okay. Let me ask you about this. You can all answer however you, when you're working on things, you know, do you ever get like writer's block? Do you ever get to a place where you're like, yeah, I don't really know what's coming next?
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit, that there's a pattern in every project where, I don't know, I would imagine this is universal, but who knows? I never talked to another composer about it, that it starts off, really has been pretty smooth for us to find a couple of like really juicy, like this really works here, this really works there, and everything is fine and dandy until at the end, there's always, it's usually one, maybe two scenes that just really get ground down and like, not quite, sorry guys, not quite. And that seems like it takes longer than the entire other 80% of the movie.
Mm-hmm. One thing though that I really like about with the three of us is that like, if we're working on a movie or something, if anybody's like, I don't know what to do, then someone else can just kind of take over and we can mm-hmm. kind of support each other in that way. And then it feels like I never, at least specifically working on films, because that's what we've been doing the last 2 years mostly, is it, I never feel like writer's block is there because there's always something else to work on, or we can hand it off, or, you know, it's there's mm-hmm. always, it's never an issue that really comes up mm-hmm. exactly for me. Because I just trust that they'll take care yeah. of it if I can.
If one of us is blocked, they're likely another one of us has a thought to yeah. lend mm-hmm. towards moving ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also right. working on films, like you have the director
yeah.
or directors oh, sure. to be like, yeah. how about trying this? Or like, I don't like this, but I would like this kind of thing. And you're like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. Like shift gears and
yeah. yeah. Yeah, so, the dynamic I was talking about is more when there are no more gears left and you just have to everybody has to do that one.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so no rejection stories, no writer's block.
Okay. Very, very focused writer's block.
Okay. Yeah. It's, yeah.
All right. God, what a charmed existence. Yeah. No, I love that for y'all so much. Because I would love to be able to say, I have no idea what happens in the next phrase. Can you figure this out? Yeah.
It also helps that the majority of our work has been with these same filmmakers, the Zellner brothers, who we have an extremely collaborative relationship with, that they bring us in super early on a project. Yeah. We get to like read a script and see early footage and start sending them ideas. And then they'll also, because they're handling a lot of the editing on their project, will start to like, the music that we send them will influence the edit, or they'll start to chop up the stuff that we send to them and rearrange it and give us new ideas for how to handle it. So it's usually not being handed like a finite task and saying, get this done right now. The movie's done except for you. Go.
That's interesting. Cause I mean, that's how you, I mean, typically it gets handed off to a composer. It's pretty done.
Yeah.
So that's interesting that in your collaborative process with your directors that there's a little bit more back and forth.
Oh, yeah. I gotta say, it really seems like the way to go. I understand that it's not the standard in the industry by a long shot, but it really feels like if you want to get everything to live on the same page, that it's a really fulfilling way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that sounds amazing. Because there's nothing more frustrating than, you know, like halfway through editing, getting that call that's like, hey, that cue that was 25 seconds needs to be 17. You're like, that's a big difference.
Yeah, that does happen too. Yeah. With
sure,
there's yeah. like as we're working, they're like, ah, well, we know you wrote this thing, but yeah, we're cutting it down like 5 seconds.
So okay,
can you
good? I'm gonna write that down. Has to manage like last minute edits also. Okay, so you got two strikes and you got one positive now. So yeah.
but again, because the collaboration has been pretty thorough with the filmmakers, that it usually, like, we can understand why they're making changes like that, and it really yeah. makes sense and usually feels motivated, and we can all feel good about working together.
That's very cool. Well, I want to ask one more thing and then I want to get more into the film stuff.
Sure.
I ask everybody, is there, and I'm really fascinated to hear what your answers are for this because of what I know about your music. I ask everybody, is there some piece of technology or equipment or instrument or software or anything that you brought into your life and when you acquired it completely changed everything or had some huge impact on what you were doing at some particular point?
That one's easy for me. It's the theremin, 100%. I saw a documentary about Leon Theremin, the inventor of the theremin, in 1999 or 8 maybe. And I bought one online and kind of, I don't know, I think we as a band were all really excited about getting a theremin to play with, just making new weird sounds. And I just ended up being the one that spent more time with it and like really taught myself how to actually play it like more classically. I think it was kind of a similar thing to when I was 5 years old, like playing by ear to classical music is exactly what I ended up doing with a theremin, just listening to a lot of slow moving adagios and playing along by ear. But I didn't expect to love it so much and for it to become such a big part of my life. But that for me, it's the theremin 100%.
It's really interesting too, because you hear the theremin used a lot more as an effect instrument.
Yes.
And not as a melodic instrument as much. Mm-hmm. And now I've messed around with the theremin before and I always just say that's because it's impossible to play. but I think that's just me. But you do use it very, very melodically and like another, melodic voice in the group. And I was watching the video and I kept looking, I go, is that a theremin back there? That can't be a theremin. They're not going to play a theremin. That would be so, they're going to play. That's awesome. Yeah, that's cool. I love that. I love that. Who else? Something special.
I don't know. This is going to sound like a almost pointlessly vague answer, but we've been doing it long enough that just the computer being in the process, first Pro Tools and now Ableton. We got started with, cassette 4-track, cassette 8-track and trying to do stuff that way. And the shift of getting to, I remember working with Pro Tools Free when we were in college. That would have been like 99. And that was kind of the first time we got to start working with digital technology. And it's still, I don't know, there's still a strong element of that for me. Pretty much anytime I like open up a session in a DAW is like, I can, just throw stuff all over the place and do whatever I want. Yeah. And having that, that canvas to work with feels like it can just incorporate every other idea that we throw at it and integrate things in such a cool way. So I don't know. It feels weird in 2024 to list that as an inspirational tool, but it did.
I mean, listen, the number of composers that say, "Oh, I got a second monitor," like, all right, really?
Yeah,
like only two? Like that's not even interesting. Yeah. Come on, you gotta do better than that. Anyway, yeah, great. Josh, anything?
I mean, kind of along the same lines of what Toto said. I remember like trying to like learn, just learning how to record things. Like I got a cassette 8-track in high school, and before that was just doing the like record on one tape machine and then play it off speakers and record it onto another, like bouncing tracks and stuff. And, it sounded
kids
like shit.
These days will never know the struggle.
It's so painful, but it like just that, just I was like, you can record yourself multiple times and, and like was so just my brain exploded and like it just,
ooh, you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. but yeah, I think maybe, just learning how to record. I think that's it.
That's really great. Well, Yvonne wins that round. She got the first y'all, your answers are great. That's very cool. So, all right, let's talk about the switch from, rock and roll band superstars to to film music. Talk about how that switch sort of came about, how you got into it. What was your entry point to kind of getting into that kind of work?
I mean, we started, well, yeah, in school, just scoring our own projects and stuff, but it
Because
really
you went
didn't.
to film school, you said.
Yeah, at UT in
Okay.
Austin. So,
Okay.
yeah, just doing that, scoring our own projects. But then our friends, the Zellner Brothers, like we met them in the early 2000s and quickly started like scoring their short films, and then they would make music videos for us. And then once they started focusing more on features, they brought us along to start doing that. And we did, I think we did like two or three with them before we did anything with anybody else. Yeah. So yeah, just the Zellners really is what kind of like pulled us in. It was something we always wanted to do, but just didn't like, it wasn't something we focused on or like try to find people who were making films to work with. It just sort of fell into our laps with our friends.
I'm gonna write that down too. Okay. No
Yeah.
writer's block, no
Yeah.
rejections.
Find
Fell
friends.
into lap. Yeah, find your friends. Jesus.
Yeah.
What's your advice for young people? Find friends that make movies.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I do recommend.
I mean, if it's yeah,
I mean, I
yeah.
think we got to know them because we were also they were making stuff independently in kind of the same way we were, just in a different medium. And so it ended up that we had friends in common in a creative community. So I think it really was just doing stuff leads you to meeting people who are doing stuff.
Very much. Yeah.
Yeah.
You find the people that are on the same wavelength as you. It happens in classical music too, where you're like, I know who I can call for this because they will love this. And then like, I know the 10 people that will laugh at me, or give me a hard time about asking them to do whatever. Yeah. No, that's very valid. Well, that's very cool. So, do you have a favorite? You have a favorite film project, something that you really, and you can all have a different answer, like something that for you was like, I really look back on this one, and this one to me is like, I really love this. You can love them all. That's also fine.
It's different aspects of each one. We haven't done anything that I wish we hadn't.
I think I'm always most excited about like the last thing we did or what's coming up. And
Next rejection. Yep.
yeah, exactly. And I feel like the last two that we did were like both insanely gratifying in totally different ways. And I'm like in love with both of them. So those are my two favorites.
All
Personally.
right.
Each one has felt so different that it's hard to compare them.
I love that too. That's
Especially
fair.
the last two were so different in kind of like tone and approach and pretty much every possible way.
Oh yeah. Well, I wonder now, do you ever like go see a movie or anything and you'd be like, they should have called us to do the score.
Actually, or there's a documentary called Fire of Love. It's about two volcanologists who work together and a married couple who are also volcanologists who studied volcanoes in the 70s, 80s. And I remember seeing that documentary in the theater and walking out and just wishing that we had the chance to work on that film because it was so beautiful.
It's the score that's in it is it's great. It's Nicolas Godin, I think is how you pronounce his name, from Air. And it's super awesome. But I think, yeah, when we left, we're like, man, that was everything about this was so great. And this would have been amazing to work on.
I love that. I won't tell him.
Yeah. He did a
Won't
great
tell him.
job. I mean, it was, phenomenal
Yeah.
already.
Yes. Yeah. Very cool. Let's see. Okay, do you have any hobbies, non-musical hobbies that you like to do in your spare time? I know we don't have spare time. The four of us don't
Yeah.
have spare
It was like
time.
spare time.
you have your time and you get frustrated enough that you just walk out of the studio and you're somewhere else for a while. But not non-musical hobbies, things that you're into.
Hikes are pretty fun. Yeah. Walking out of the studio and just continuing to walk.
Yeah.
And walk.
Yeah. Nature stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of good hiking in and around Austin. So mm-hmm. I think we all get into hikes. I love to garden. I love plants. I have way too many, but I love doing that.
That's cool. Plants make me sneeze, so I'm fine without that. Have you ever gotten chased by a bat in Austin?
No, but we found one on a bridge that seemed to be struggling.
Someone came and got it.
Somebody came and picked it up, but yeah, we've run into bats before.
They're around.
Yeah.
Okay. Nature walks. I can get behind that. Yeah.
Pretty much everything else that I think we're drawn to as a hobby ends up being part of the band. So I don't know where the line really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, I like sewing quite a bit. So I will make sometimes costumey stuff for us as a band for performances. We do a lot of projections. So that kind of or mapping with projections. So I can. Mm-hmm. I've made a lot of screens for our stage setup, all different shapes and sizes of screens. But yeah, it's fun to incorporate hobbies into the band, under the umbrella of the band.
Yeah. I know what you mean about hobbies becoming jobs. Yeah, that has happened. Says the guy with two podcasts now. That's great. So tell, what are you working on now? Like you got anything on the horizon, stuff that you're into, things you're working on or what's happening?
Yeah. We're working on trying to find a new project for like a film project, would be super fun. But otherwise we've been working on making a show that's just the three of us, that we incorporate like soundtrack stuff and then sort of ambient music and stuff. And so, we're starting to work a little bit more on that so we can perform. Mm-hmm. And then a regular band record would be great. It's been like the last one came out in 2017. It feels like
it's time
for a new one. Mm-hmm. We have a whole like thousands of songs, just like I you know, like little snippets,
sure,
stockpiled that we mm-hmm. need to kind of focus on.
We've also been writing music for the Alamo Drafthouse pre-shows. A lot of like little, like short, like bumper songs,
yeah,
for the pre-show and some of the introductory melodies for like film companies, is
like the little logos that happened before
a films. Logo with like an 8-second song.
Yep. But, yeah,
doing some of that.
Yeah,
that's cool. I love that. Well, we're getting to the end of our time together. I always end these interviews with what I call the 10 question segment. They are 10 inconsequential, frivolous, sometimes nonsensical, always silly, non-serious questions. And as listeners of the show have pointed out, very frequently there are not 10 of them. but that's what it says on the show rundown, is that it's a 10 question segment at the end. So that's what I'm going to continue to call it, whether there are 10 questions or not. And these are for good fun. Before we get to that, tell everybody where they can find you out in the world on the socials and everything else, all of that.
Yeah. Our website is theoctopusproject.com, and we're on, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that, as either The Octopus Project or just Octopus Project. I forget which is which, but we're easy to find. We're out there.
Josh just fixed up the YouTube channel.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Nice. Yes.
Go look at our YouTube channel.
I've been there. Yeah. You sure have. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a. I didn't even realize we really had one. It was kind of in a crazy disarray, so took a couple days to organize that thing.
Every now and then I'll get a like an email like, oh, so and so commented on this video on your YouTube channel. I'll be like, I need to take that video down.
Why is that still up?
I don't want that up from 20 years ago or whatever it was, you know, like however long it's been. Like, let me take that down. I've written better stuff since then. Let me take that down. Stop commenting on that. Well, that's great. That's very cool. And hopefully we'll get to catch you live and in person sometime in concert.
You said you're in Dallas?
Very
Cool.
Waxahachie, to be specific.
Okay, great.
If you know your DFW
We do.
geography. I did not. I mean, I'm a Houston guy. I did not. So when I was telling people, oh, I'm moving to Dallas, we're going to be neighbors, they're like, dude, you live 2 hours from me. I was like, I don't know. I know how to get to the airport and I know how to get to the baseball stadium, and that's it.
Just saying, we've had really good DFW shows. I'm sure we'll be up in the region before too long.
Lots of great places to play up here as
And
well.
all across the country, coming soon.
I love it. Octopus, spread your tentacles. Ooh, you can use that. You can use that. No charge.
All right, thank you.
No charge. Cool. Or maybe like get stuck on tour. I don't know. Anyway, I digress. That was probably like the third sidebar. All right, so 10, maybe 10, sort of 10, almost 10, maybe not 10 questions. And we'll just go boom, boom, boom. We'll go right in a row, okay?
Cool.
All right. What do you have a favorite food?
Sushi.
Blueberries.
I'll go with the old pizza.
Ooh, pizza. Yeah, always a winner. Do you have a favorite place you like to vacation or visit?
Spain, that's a good one.
Spain
Spain,
or Hawaii.
Japan.
I could get behind all of those. Those
Duluth.
are,
I don't think I've ever been there. I don't
it's
know.
lovely, it's lovely. Duluth is not a sponsor of the show, so we could say
Yeah.
you have a favorite color?
Blue,
green,
red.
Wow. Okay, got all your bases covered. If you remember, what's the last thing that you Googled? Sometimes this is the answer I have to edit.
What was it? I ma maps. I just
Oh, you
I
did
just
just Google
Googled
a
a
map.
map.
How to get somewhere.
Yeah, like an hour
It
ago.
was something good, but what was it?
I believe that.
See.
Usually it's who the hell is Jason Nitsch?
No, I did not Google that.
Fair.
Yeah, I think the map. That was me.
Oh gosh,
All
mine's
right.
not fun. I was trying to Google the name of somebody who I'm afraid is might be scamming my mom right now. That was my last
That
Google search. No
is
luck
not
yet.
fun.
It is not
No.
fun. It's not a fun one.
Okay. Yeah, don't do that. All right. Toto abstains courteously. All right, here we go.
I don't have a juicy answer, so
It's not really supposed to be interesting. Normally it's like, what time does Costco close? You know, like I don't know. Let's see. I don't even know what question we're on now. It doesn't matter. Oh, this is important. This is a really critical question. Maybe the most important thing that we will have talked about the whole hour. So when you go to bed at night, socks on or off?
Off,
Off.
on. I have cold feet.
2 out of 3 got it right. Okay. That's fine. That's fair. That's fair. You be you. If you were doing any other job other than what you do right now, what do you think that might be? Something non-musical.
Something other than
Hard to think
travel.
about, right?
Visual art, does that count as
Sure. Yeah.
non-musical?
It's not
Okay.
music.
I mean, it's a fair amount of the job that we've created for ourselves to do that currently. So I don't know if it's different, but.
Okay.
Yeah, I would work with plants in some way. I would spend my time with them.
Sounds serene. I love that. Do you binge watch things? Does anybody binge watch
Yeah.
TV shows or what? Or they're not on TV anymore. Everything is streamed. You kids and your video, violent video games and streaming movies, you can watch all the time. You binge watch things. Everybody binges things. I don't really have enough contiguous time to binge, but I do like to watch.
Yes.
Yeah,
We
I
all just
watch.
watched the Shogun. Just
Oh,
finished that.
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it was, we didn't binge it exactly, but we would. Maybe we'll watch two episodes in a row one time, but
I find I watch the first 15 minutes of a lot of things. And they're like, well, I'm out of time. I gotta go. I got a piece due. Do you have a favorite time of day to write or to be creative or anything like that?
It's over the, all over the place for me.
Same.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, at least for us, like, we try to work during the normal work day on stuff usually, but like definitely in the middle of the night, like, oh my God, I have this like idea or whatever.
Yeah.
Or early morning. I don't know. It's all over the place.
So you've never had that experience where you just shoot up at 4 a.m. and you're like, I've got it, and you run
Oh
out to the
yeah.
studio.
Yeah. Oh yeah. All the time.
All right, I love that. Well, I don't know if that was 10 questions or not, but
It
that's we're gonna call
was
it 10
about 10.
questions. It was
Yeah.
10-ish. I feel like, yeah. I feel like any more would be too much. Octopus Project. Is it the Octopus Project or is it
Yeah.
Octopus Project?
Officially,
It's
whatever.
the.
But the
Yeah.
Octopus
Officially
Project.
the, but sometimes it's fun to drop the definite article for style reasons.
Sure. I get that. That's great. Well, the Octopus Project. It's been great fun chatting about your music and enjoyed checking it out. And we'll continue to and encourage everybody else to do the same, including watch for the movies. The
Yeah.
Sasquatch movie. Now the name has escaped me. The Sasquatch
Sasquatch.
Sunset.
Yes.
Sasquatch. That's hard to say.
Yes.
Sasquatch Sunset is very hard to
Yeah.
say. Yeah. Check that out. I have not seen it yet, but I'm going to, because I like movies. It sounds like my kind of movie. Seems
Depending on
quirky.
when this podcast goes up, it'll probably be on VOD. That's
Yeah.
coming soon.
Oh, awesome. I love that so much. Well,
Yeah.
thank y'all. Enjoy Austin.
Yeah.
And I'll have you back on the show for next season. We could just talk about Houston
Sounds
Okay.
great.
or
Yes,
Rick.
please.
Nothing but Houston. We could tell our best hurricane survival story and whatever else.
Numbers.
If you need a third podcast, I'm sure you could fill it with Houston Ephemera.
I don't think I have the strength. This one sort of happened by accident. I don't think that I could just like slide into a third. All right. Well, thank y'all. Enjoyed it. Appreciate you being on.
Thank
And
you so much.
I look forward to more.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
Really
thank
appreciate it. Thanks for
you.
asking us.
All Thanks for having
right.
us.
Composer Chat is brought to you by SCM Media. Is your audience dead? Bring it back to life. And thanks to my guest this week, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to watch for next week's episode with the next composer on my list. And you can find my other podcast, Beyond the Belt, Adventures from the Outer Rim, a sci-fi drama, anywhere that podcasts are streamed. Listen free, seasons 1 through 3 are out now. You can find me on Instagram at jasonninch.composer. You can find me on Threads at jasonninch.composer. You can find me on the Facebooks, if you're old like me, Jason K. Ninch. You can find me on the web at jasonninch.com or at beyondthebeltpodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Are you a singer looking to take your voice to the next level, struggling with technique? Go practice is the answer, including complete guided warm-ups and exercises to troubleshoot what's holding you back. Go practice is perfect for singers who are traveling, getting ready for an audition, and anyone who wants to build healthy practice habits. That's Go Practice, one word, available in the App Store and Google Play.